The last beta reader matchup of the summer has been extended thanks to gremlins in the system. Instead of the matchup happening on the 2nd of June, it will now be extended to the 9th of June with matchup emails going out that day. If you haven't registered yet and would like to take advantage of this extension, you have until midnight Eastern Time on the 8th of June. Please go to theshitaboutwriting.com, look for the beta reader matchup tab, and you can find all the details and register there.
I'm not going to lie, this was a brutal winter, guys, and after a brief spring, we have landed in summer, thank goodness. I'm ready to pack up the sweaters and get out the linen. I want those light fabrics that make us feel good the moment they're on our bodies, and that is why I love my Quince products. Did you know that Quince has elegant, everyday pieces like 100% European linen pants, dresses, and tops with styles starting at $32? Remember that Quince is 50 to 80% less than similar brands because you're paying for quality, not brand markup. If you haven't checked them out in a while, they're now a destination for home, kitchen, bedding, and beyond. So make sure you get their pieces that bring a premium feeling to everyday life. I am newly in love with my 100% European linen shorts, something I can wear to the park or dress up. They're thick enough to have some structure, but light enough to feel wearable all summer long. I'll be in mine every week. I have them in black, but there are 11 colors to choose from. There are 4,261 reviews, all averaging 5 stars. Made with European flax and machine washable, I'm going to need another pair. Elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/cheesenotya for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/cheesenotya for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/cheesenotya.
There and welcome to our show, The Shit No One Tells You About Writing. I'm best-selling author Bianca Murray, and I'm joined by Cece Lira of Wendy Sherman Associates and Carly Waters of PS Literary.
All right, everyone, we have a very special episode of The Shit No One Tells You About Writing. I am here with the debut author, Miranda Shulman. She wrote a wonderful novel called Harmless. I'm holding it up. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see me holding it up. I have an arc, guys. It's not a finished copy yet because as I interview the lovely Miranda, her book has not come out yet. So we're going to talk about all the things that go into making a book a real thing out in the world. Once upon a time, Miranda was exactly where you were, listening to The Shit No One Tells You About Writing, drafting away, dreaming of this day. And now, pretty soon, on April 14th? Do I have that right?
It's April 14th.
Yeah. And now on April 14th, she will be a published author. It's so exciting. So I will read her official bio, which is like super short and sweet. So Miranda Shulman attended Bard College, where she majored in human rights. Before pursuing a career in publishing, she worked at Planned Parenthood. She grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and still lives there. Harmless is her first novel. Welcome, Miranda.
Thank you so much for having me. I love this podcast so much. So this is like such an honor. Oh my God. I can't believe it's happening.
This is how Miranda and I connected, actually. Like, I did not know she was a fan of the podcast. And it's like, well, it's wonderful because now I'm a fan of her novel and therefore a fan of yours, because that's how it works when you love a novel. Okay, so take me back to the Miranda that decided she was going to write a book, like a book to be published. Like,
okay,
who was that Miranda? Where was she in her life? Was this always the idea? Like, was this book always going to be the book that it became? Like, take me back to that Miranda.
Okay. Well, the Miranda that began writing a book, which was not this book,
okay,
worked at Planned Parenthood. So it felt kind of important to include that as part of my bio. And I was in the donor services department at Planned Parenthood, and I was sort of would spend my days waiting for calls from donors who either wanted to increase or cancel monthly donations. So there was some downtime in between those calls, and I have been a writer my entire life. And so in those down moments, I just sort of began writing on the side of my work computer. And yeah, and so that was a different book that ended up being like, I thought it was a novel. And then I finished a draft, looked back at it and was like, oh my God, I just wrote my life. And so then
you had written a memoir?
I had written like happened? A memoir at the age of 22.
Oh my gosh.
It was so, of course, that is living in a drawer, but it was an amazing experience. And it also taught me that I could write that amount of words, I guess, about specific characters, you know, and in a specific world. So from there, I began working on the draft that became Harmless, which was nothing like Harmless. It was kind of like a romantic comedy, which Harmless certainly is not. Like, there's definitely comedy in Harmless, and there's definitely a little bit of romance in Harmless, but
it's not a rom-com.
It is not a rom-com. It is not a rom-com. It's quite creepy. Do you know your genre? Okay, so
like, how would you describe your genre? Because I have discovered that many authors are like, I don't actually know my genre. We're talking like accomplished writers, various books under their belt.
Yeah, I think it's literary suspense. That's what I've been told, and that's what feels right to me. What would you say?
I mean, I definitely think it's suspenseful, but to me, okay, so I actually got a question from one of our listeners, because to preface this question, one of our listeners sent in a question. I shared in my stories that I was going to interview you, and I was like, do you guys have any questions for Miranda? Like, obviously no one's read your novel, but they looked the novel up. And one of the people asked me, wait, so I'm reading her Goodreads. That's what they said. I'm reading her Goodreads. Is this sad girl lit? Now, I feel strongly it is not sad girl lit. And in fairness, the person only read the Goodreads, right? Like, and I'm pretty sure they mean like the pitch on Goodreads. I don't know if they mean, I don't know what they mean, but I think it's more literary, definitely literary fiction, potentially book club fiction. And here's why I think it might be book club fiction. There's this angst and this existentialism that you explore in this friendship between these three women. I'm saying three, it's almost four, because you also have Audrey. And I feel like this is a good moment for me to tell people what your book is about. So, because I know people listening are probably like, what are you guys talking about? So essentially we have B, right? And this is how the book begins. So I'm trying to think of how to talk about this. So B is crying over a jar of olives. Like, that's how we meet her in the first chapter. Mm-hmm. It's her sister's memorial, which was delayed 2 years because of COVID. And Audrey, who's her sister, had substance abuse. Like, she was addicted to, I believe, heroin. And B was like taking care of her. And like, her sister was obviously their mom's favorite. And she is getting into a fight with her roommate about the jar of olives, because her roommate ate one of them. And the jar of olives reminds her of her sister, because it was the last thing her sister ate. Point is, I would say this book is about friendship, about three friends, B, Tatum, and Layla, who decide, because B has this idea, to open up a kennel, right? But it's a childhood idea. And this is what I mean by existentialism. So much of this book is, when we were kids, we all had dreams. I'm going to grow up and insert whatever we were going to do here. And we all had crazy ideas. Like, my sister wanted to work at SeaWorld. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, usually it's not rational. We're kids. And these young adults, they decide to do the thing. And I'm not going to say whether they do it or not, because I feel like that's a spoiler. But it's about their friendship and about how, like, the dynamics change from when they were a kid. And so that existentialism, to me, especially for readers like millennials, Gen Z, so much of the world is crazy right now. And the fact that there's so much angst in this book, that to me, that's it's almost like literary angsty suspense. That's how I would say it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I've also – thank you so much for that summary. Yeah, I've thought of it as a term that I learned – weird girl lit fic.
That make sense.
Yes. I think it may fit into that category. And I love to hear that it feels a little bit like it could be book club fiction, because I like the idea of people talking about it and thinking about it in that way.
It starts conversations. It really does. I actually flagged, I know we're not supposed to read from ARCs, guys, but please don't get mad at me for doing it. Lovely publisher, if you're listening, don't get mad. But like, look at this. Look at this like excerpt. Helplessness could be paralyzing, terrifying. As an adult, she still often felt it about her life, but also about bloodthirsty, power-hungry governments around the world. Yet even when faced with these irreparable slashes to the fabric of humanity, there were things she'd done and should do more of to take a stand. In the past, she'd protested alongside friends, held up cardboard signs, screamed enchanted, and marched until her feet ache. She'd phoned banked for politicians she believed in. She'd call her representatives, waiting for the beep, and spoken passionately to their answering machines. She should do the same with her own life now because she could. She wasn't a little kid anymore. And it goes on, and if I keep reading, you guys are going to find out who is saying this, and I don't want to because I feel like that's a spoiler. But this idea of, I'm a grown-up now. I should have power. I should be able to do things. This is a universal feeling. And yet I'm paralyzed because it is something that, again, generations like millennials, Gen Z, and I'm sure other generations too, like, it's probably not just us, but we've been feeling, which is like, we are powerless against these power structures of the world. And that to me is a conversation starter in this book. And this thread is woven throughout. Like, I read one passage, but I could have read so many others, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think, I mean, that's what I was thinking about in terms of childhood dreams. Like, when you're a child, yes, you think that anything can happen in your life. And as you grow up, you realize that's absolutely not the case. You know, there are so many things that you actually really can't do for many different reasons. Like, maybe you need to make money or, like, so I think that was really what I was thinking, and how out of control a person can feel over their own life, even when they are sort of doing as much as they possibly can, or at least like doing something that they can do, like in support of what they believe in outside of their own life, you know? It's kind of hard sometimes to turn that inward.
Yeah.
And I've thought a lot about the way that childhood dreams may appear in our adult lives. Because I think that maybe there's actually a lot we can learn from the things that we dream of doing when we're very young. Yeah. And even just like the kinds of things that maybe you talk to your parents about.
Yeah.
Like, and they remind you that you really cared about at a certain point in your life. Yeah. And
or with your best friends, like the girls.
Yeah, or your best friends.
Like the
absolutely.
Women do.
Maybe. Yes. Yes, yeah. Yes, totally. And I was sort of thinking also about, like, you know, the ways in which those desires endure and then the ways in which those desires do not at all endure, and what might drive a person sort of, I guess I was thinking a lot about like late 20s life and the fact that you can often feel a little bit lost in your late 20s. Sorry, I feel like I'm rambling right now.
No, really no, because I think that that's the conversation starter though. And okay. This is okay. Why, like, I get the literary. I'm not trying to say it's not, because the writing is undeniably literary.
Okay.
But to me, the thing that's going to start conversations around this book, and if I were reading it for a book club, like, I would be like, what was your childhood dream?
Yeah.
You know, asking people around the table. And what does it say about you? Who did you tell? Who did you not tell? When was the last time you thought about it? When did it die? Because every childhood dream dies, even if you end up pursuing it. Like, I am currently living my childhood dream. I work with books. But it did die at a certain point. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, a version of it always dies. So this is what I'm saying. Like, to me, huge book club fiction. I highly recommend this to anyone who really wants to get in touch with that version of themselves that was idealistic and dreamy and just, you know, would take the world by storm. And when I'm a grown-up, I'll get to do XYZ. And I forget which one of the protagonists was thinking this specific part, but there's a part in the book in which she's saying, I believe it's 27. She's like, look at me. I'm a full grown adult. Like, I'm 27. And what do I have to show for it? You know? And because this has changed. I think millennials were the first generation where this changed, where it used to be that, you know, adulthood looked the same. You typically graduated from college or learned a trade and had the house and 1.5 kids or 2.5 kids or whatever the 0.5 kid situation was and bought a car. Like, there was a script, right? And there's no more script because the world has changed and it's all a dumpster fire. And that creates existentialism and like issues around existentialism, right?
Yeah.
So I think, maybe we're both rambling, but it's a fun ramble. This is what I'm saying.
It's a fun ramble. It also is kind of like, for me, what I really enjoyed writing about, like, or what really drew me to write about this, I think, was also sort of the inherent humor in the idea of these people who they really are not, they do not want to devote their lives to caring for dogs. They actually really don't.
Yeah, 100%. It's not a book about people who like dogs. No, I thought it was going to be in the beginning.
Not. Yeah.
It's like, it's a childhood dream. It's the kennel. Yeah. Although they want to make a profit, and I'm not sure how that would happen. Like, that sounds wild. But I got that was intentional, right? Like, that was you showing us that their heads are in the cloud. Well, one person's head is in the cloud. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I want it to be a little bit funny and not really make sense, you know, and you can see that. And they can see that, and yet they're still invested in it. Yeah, they're still invested in it, and they're still doing it because actually that's the kind of lost that you can feel at this specific moment in your life when you're like, I don't really know where to go from here, I guess, and what – I don't know. Yeah. So I think that was what I was thinking about. And my childhood dream was to open a dog kennel. That was my childhood dream with my two very close childhood friends and my sister. So it really like – and I was – so that was what started the wheels turning for me, I guess, was like what would have to happen in my life to make myself the me that exists today – want to go back in time in some form and actually do that.
Yeah.
And so that was the germ of the book, I think. And that made me, it made me really laugh to think about myself doing that because I know that that would not make me happy. But it also made me think about the pieces of myself that still exist from that child who really did want to do that. So that was the germ for me. And I'm so glad that it resonated in any way and feels like something that people would want to talk about and maybe relate to. And thank you so much.
I have a question. Are there, is B the protagonist that you're closest with? And I ask because you start the story with her. Or is it Layla? Or is it Tatum? Is that how I pronounce
her
name?
Tatum. Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe Audrey. I don't know. Is there a protagonist? I mean, I guess it has to be a protagonist. It has to be someone with a point of view. But is there someone that you're like, it's easier for me to access this person's psyche?
Yes. Okay. So definitely Tatum. Tatum is definitely the person whose psyche it was easiest for me to access. I mean, B.
Interesting.
B took a lot of time to get right. She's sort of all over the place. There's a lot of different things that I had to figure out how to justify about her, I think. You know, she's a person who's living alone in the world, but she has pretty serious, like, mental disorders, you know? So it was a lot of calibrating with B. But I also, for B, what interested me was that I think, without getting too in the weeds, because people have not read the book yet.
Yeah. And no spoilers. It's okay to share spoilers. Initial stuff, but like we are a no spoilers podcast. I feel very strongly about this. No spoilers.
Thank you. And honestly, that is important in this book, I think. But yeah, I think – so she really thrives. She really wants to take care of people. She wants to feel needed. That's the way that she connects with people. And I think that's something that a lot of us can relate to, like the desire to feel needed because that makes a person feel safe in a relationship.
And it's like a part of her identity.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's also why the dog kennel thing appeals to her as an adult. She wants to feel needed. Yeah, so I could relate to that part of it, that part of her psyche. But Tatum is a person who I feel like I know in a much deeper way, you know, sort of. And B was constantly surprising me, but Tatum, I felt like I was sort of like in it with her. And not that I've had any of the same experiences that she goes through, but I felt. But
the way she thinks, I guess.
Yeah, the way that closer. She thinks, the way she thinks. And she felt really important to me. Her character feels really important to me because my desire anyway is that she sort of grounds B's sort of recklessness and
I can see that
wildness, you know, sort of. And then there's Tatum, who maybe is a person who's having a lot of feelings that maybe aren't the most like attractive, but that maybe we can relate to a little bit more in certain 100%. Ways. Yeah.
100%.
I'm so glad.
So was the beginning always B's point of view? Like, was that always the entry point into the story, or did you change
it? It was always the entry point into the story. It really was. I will say that there was another version of the story. I wonder if it counts as a spoiler that I'm saying. I don't think it does. That Audrey is dead.
If it does, we'll cut it. No. We know this from like the pitch copy.
Yes.
Okay, Audrey B's sister is dead. Like she's going to her sister's memorial, right? Like
Yes. She is dead. In another version of this book, she was not dead. And so it was actually, I had four POVs actually in another version of this book. But it always started with B. And B was always, had sort of obsessive tendencies and a lot of jealousy. And
I love her.
Yeah.
She's fascinating.
I'm so glad.
Like, she behaves so badly. Like, she, like, I'm not going to say who or why she follows people. Yeah. I like that about her. Like, yeah. I'm always saying protagonists need protagonism, right? Like, the plot can't just happen to you. You need to make the plot happen too. You know, like, the protagonists need to make things happen. And B makes things happen. Just saying.
She makes things happen. And I will say, like, what really kills me about that, the following, is that she's a very, very lonely person. And
yes,
that is actually
her. She's vulnerable.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And that's like her very misguided way of spending 100%. Time with people.
But that came across. See, you never spelled it out, but that came across. Like, it was so clear that she was doing that because she simultaneously, again, wanted to be needed, like you said, like wanted to spend time with people, but also didn't feel safe enough to spend time with people. So, like, putting that distance, that was her way of connecting. And I'm not saying it was right, because of course it's not okay to go around following people, but like, we want interesting, fascinating protagonists. We don't want boring protagonists in our lives. Like, down with boring protagonists. And B is not boring.
I'm so glad you feel that way. I feel the same way. She is not boring. And that was also why I sort of felt it was really fun to discover her. And I really did a lot of discovering as I was writing her. And that's kind of how I write everything. Like, I'm sort of, I'm discovering story as I go. I'm discovering characters as I go.
How long did it take you, like, to write the full draft? And, like, like, essentially, like, the creation process up until the time you were ready to query agents. Tell us about that.
So I actually, honestly, I did it. I wrote this draft, the first draft, very quickly. I did the Jamie Attenberg's 1,000 words a day over the summer of 2021, I think. Yeah. And that worked so well for me because I wasn't overthinking anything. I wasn't, nothing that I was doing was precious. That's so important for me when I'm working on a first draft, is like, I'm creating a world and maybe an energy and like a color for the book, perhaps, but I'm not, nothing about the specifics is set in stone. Nothing. So, but that's the best way that I work, I think, is like where I just understand the world, and that there's a draft where I'm just understanding the world. And then there's a draft after that draft where typically I throw out that draft, the first draft.
Like, do you start over? Like, do you totally start over, blank page onward?
I wrote three totally unique drafts of this book before I began revising any of them. Because that's just how it worked out for me this time. I hope it's not always that way, because that is, it takes a lot of time,
it
obviously.
Does. Yeah. Well, but also, you know, good books can't be rushed. You know, it's going to take as long as it takes. At least it's worth it, because in the end you have this amazing product, right?
I hope. Yeah. I mean, thank you. Yeah. I think I feel really happy and proud of the process that I went through to get for the book to be what it is now. But yeah, but it's also interesting, you know, as I start working on another project, like the things that I'm taking from my first journey to a finished novel and the things that I'm leaving behind a little bit. And also just like, you know, of course, I'm year to year, we're in different life circumstances. And so, of course, your writing practice has to change as your life changes. Yeah. So,
and it is something that, like, I know so many writers who say this, like, their first book does often take longer because you are learning how to reach a final draft, like a draft that you're happy with. So I think that part's normal. But like, what about the agent part of it? Like, how did you meet your agent? How did that happen? Tell us about that meet cute story.
Yeah. So with one of the very early drafts of this book, I applied to a fellowship program that is sort of hosted by Stony Brook University called Bookends. And it's like a novel revision program. So you spend the entire year revising that novel first with a pod of three people, including yourself. And then, and those are other like students of the fellowship. And then the second half of the program, you are assigned a mentor who is like an accomplished author. And they work on, or they, in my case, my mentor like sent me sort of an editorial letter. And then I spent the, I guess it was probably like 4 or 5 months in the end, working through revisions based on her editorial letter. And my mentor was Karen Bender, who is fantastic. She's amazing. Yeah. So then at the end of that program, we were each matched with an agent. And the end, the graduation portion of the program happens at the Southampton Writers Conference. Yes. So at the end of the program, every fellow is matched with an agent. And
it's exciting. It's not, wait, how many fellows are there?
There are 12 fellows. So,
so there's one unique agent per fellow. Is that how it works?
So actually, there's one agent per three fellows. So there were four agents, I believe, my year. Yeah. I sort of went into my meeting. The understanding surrounding these agent meetings is that you are not going to be offered representation necessarily. It's really just sort of like a meeting where someone who really knows their stuff is going to tell you where your book might fit in the market.
Right.
But I got
so lucky.
You're being
matched to get like a consultation, like a meeting with them. That's what the matching
is
about.
Exactly.
Totally fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this happens at a conference you mentioned. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. It happens at the Southampton Writers Conference. So, and that's also at the beginning of the fellowship, you also spend a weekend at the Southampton Writers Conference. And then at the end of the program, you spend another weekend there. And at the final weekend, that's when the agent meetings happen. And I got incredibly lucky. And the agent I was matched with wanted to work on the project. So, and she's fantastic. And we've, you know, she has done so right by me. She's an amazing, amazing agent. Yeah, I'm so, so lucky to be working with her. So, and her name is Sabrina Tights. In case
you should shout her out so people can query her.
Yeah, Sabrina Tights at WME. Yeah, so that was my sort of not normal agent querying situation, which was not
weird. So you guys matched and you had like a meeting, and then did she request a full? Did you send it to her? Yeah.
So actually, this is what I should have said. Those agent meetings happen after the agent has read a full draft of the manuscript. So the thing that's
that
really
changes
special,
everything then.
I know.
They know your
I know.
Whole manuscript. That is special. Oh, good job.
It's
this
special.
Sounds like a good fellowship. I like that. That's smart. Because like as an agent, if we only read 10 pages, and in fairness, if we're going to do this in volume, that's the only way.
If you're like me and have travel coming up, whether it's a late spring break, summer vacations, weddings abroad, or international work trips, imagine arriving actually understanding the language. Ordering confidently at restaurants, connecting with locals at museums, feeling immersed instead of just visiting. We are headed to the Alps very soon with the kids and some friends of ours, and I can't wait to order my beer in German. Ein großes Bier, bitte. Okay, I need some work, but I will get there because Rosetta Stone has been a trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years. Their immersive, intuitive method helps you naturally absorb your new language. No memorizing, random vocabulary lists, and no relying on translations. Instead, you learn by connecting words, visuals, and meaning in context. The way language is meant to be learned. My German will soon get better because of the true accent feature, which is designed to give real-time feedback on pronunciation. Lessons are simple to add to your regular schedule every day with the app or desktop fitted in whether you have 5 minutes or an hour. Learn faster, retain longer. Rosetta Stone helps you in your new language naturally, helping you think and communicate with confidence. Ready to start learning a new language this spring? Visit rosettastone.com/today to explore Rosetta Stone and choose the language that's right for you. Go to rosettastone.com/today now and begin your language learning journey.
As a literary agent, you know there's only one thing I like talking about more than books, and that's money. More importantly, cash that stays in your pocket. I'm on the lookout for our listeners at all times. I'm combing deal memos and book publishing contracts for hidden ways that writers are on the hook, and that's why we are thrilled to partner with Chime, who's changing the way people bank. They offer the most rewarding fee-free banking built just for you. That's right, built for you, not the 1%. Chime members can benefit from up to $1,150 in annual rewards, fee-free. Direct deposit unlocks the most rewarding way to bank at Chime. Chime is rated 5 stars by USA Today for customer service. That's real humans 24/7. You're not just switching banks, you're upgrading to America's number one choice for banking with a Chime checking account. They're not like traditional old banks that charge you overdraft and monthly fees. And if you're like me and travel a bunch and love premium travel perks like airport lounge access, you've got it. And the 24/7 travel concierge included with your Chime card. My younger self would have loved a fast track to airport lounge access. You get 5% cash back on Chime card in a category of your choice, like gas or groceries for your next writer's retreat. You get savings that grow faster with 3.75 APY. That's 9 times higher than the national average. You can even get up to $500 of your pay when you say, with my pay. They also have SpotMe, which lets you overdraft up to $200 fee-free. Chime is not just smarter banking. It's the most rewarding way to bank. Join the millions who are already banking fee-free today. Head to chime.com/tsnotya. That's chime.com/tsnotya. It only takes a few minutes to sign up.
But like in a special conference situation, if I read a whole manuscript, then it's a totally different conversation. Gotcha.
Yeah. That's what's really, really special about the agent meetings. And they can give you like really comprehensive feedback. And it's a different kind of feedback than a mentor like another author might give you. Yeah. So it's really, really valuable. And it would have been really valuable either way. But I got very lucky. And at that point, so then she offered to represent me and she was incredibly patient and wonderful. And she said basically that I could take my time and make a decision in my own time and she would be there. And I, at the end of the fellowship, I had to work very, very quickly to finish a draft. And I knew that I could, on my own, bring it to a place that I felt a little bit better about it, you know? Okay. I felt like I could revise it myself for a little while because I knew what I wanted to do. And so I spent like 9 months revising after that point. And I stayed in touch with Sabrina. Thank you.
Yeah.
I stayed in touch with
Sabrina. You didn't rush. I love that.
Yeah. I really knew she was my person because she was so enthusiastic, so supportive, and so patient. Like I could not have asked for more.
And also like a very ethical agent, right? Because like I feel like someone who's like, take your time. I'm not putting a clock on this. It's not that agents don't get to put a clock as long as everyone's being honest and the clock is reasonable, but it does speak volumes about how ethical she is. And that's really awesome.
Absolutely. Because I think she also really understood that it was my very first experience speaking to another agent, like speaking to any agent.
Of course.
Yeah. And so she was really, really patient and wonderful. And then we signed together in February of 2024. Okay. Yes. I graduated from Bookends in 2023. And then in February of 2024, I sent her the draft that I had revised. And then I signed with her. And then we went on submission like maybe 2.5 months later or so.
Exciting. Did you guys do revisions together before submission?
Yeah. We did a few. It was not
like tweaks.
Like little tweaks.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then we went out on submission. Exciting. Yeah.
And wait, how long did it take to hear back from editor?
Yet again, I got really lucky in terms of this part of the process. She sent me a list of like she talked me through each person that she was going to submit it to and explained why they would be a good fit in her mind. And then we went on submission. I guess maybe I'm misstating the amount of time, but I think we went on submission at the end of May of 2024. So it was February to May. And then, so maybe it was like about 3 months, I was offered a deal in the middle of June, I think.
That's exciting. That's so fast.
Yeah, so it was like 2 weeks, which I was like maybe a little bit more than 2 weeks. But yeah, I was so lucky and I ended up with the perfect editor for me.
Yay.
I love her. So yeah.
Okay, you have to tell us because I know who your editor is and I adore her. Okay, please shout out the lovely Pilar. Come on.
Yes. Pilar Garcia Brown at Dutton. There is no one who I could, I'm so lucky to have worked with her on this book. And
she's fabulous. She is, like she's known for her great taste.
She's
very
brilliant.
Very discerning.
She's brilliant. And I felt so beyond honored and continue to feel like overwhelmed in a way. I still can't believe this happened. And I cannot believe I ended up with the team that I ended up with. It's Pilar. It's my amazing marketer, Isabel Da Silva. It is my publicist, Lauren Morrow, who is just, they're all so beyond incredible. And I'm so lucky to have wound up with this team.
For you.
Yeah.
You know, we always say it only takes one yes, but the truth is that one yes can ripple into many yeses from many people on the team. And that's awesome to you. And I love that. Okay. So did you work on edits with Pilar? I mean, what was that process like?
Yeah. We did three rounds of edits. The first round was more structural edits, I would say, and took a lot longer and was a was a much heavier lift, I would say. Most of the edits from that first round revolved around the ending, which...
Okay.
Because I think maybe, I wonder if you feel this way, but the book, the beginning, maybe 3/4 of the book sort of has one tone, and then the ending sort of becomes a little bit, maybe a little bit like faster,
like when
or something.
At the Yellow House?
Yeah. Yeah. Like a little bit, maybe.
I didn't feel it when I was reading it.
Okay.
Like, I didn't feel it when I was reading it. So it felt like the resolution of their arcs. Like, but no, I don't think I felt that way. No, because I would have remembered.
Okay. Well, that actually makes me really happy, because I feel like then this revision, that round of revision was successful. But yeah, because I think maybe the first draft that she read, there was sort of a pace shift, and she really, really helped me sort of get that in check. And even if there is still a bit of a pace shift or a sort of a tone shift or whatever, I think she worked so hard and was so, so, so helpful as I was sort of honing that a little bit, because this book required a lot of calibration in a lot of different ways, I think. And yeah, because it's sort of very introspective, but there's also a lot of plot. Anyway.
Three points of view.
So, yes.
So yeah, it is a tall order, especially for a debut.
It was a lot. But yeah. But then we had a second round, and it was less structural, but still just sort of like, I think it was a lot about B still. A lot of making sure that what B's motivations are really track, making sure that sort of when she sort of flies off the handle, it fits with the rest of who she is a little bit.
Gotcha.
Which was sort of, that was the thing for me that was the hardest to get right, I think, out of anything throughout the process of writing this book. But yeah. And then from there, it was like another round that was even smaller edits. And then, it was three rounds.
And now here we are. About to have your debut. I love it.
Yeah.
So, okay. Another question I want to ask you is about breaking into the industry, access, community, like how do you become a contender in this industry? And a lot of that has to do with like being around the right people and building the relationships that you have to build, fostering community. We talk all the time about the importance of, it could be something as small as tagging authors on social media in a positive review, anything, like being a good literary citizen, participating in the literary community. What was that experience like for you? And what are your general thoughts on that?
So I'm extremely lucky, because a family member of mine at this point, my boyfriend of 10 years, his mother is Meg Wolitzer, and she has absolutely been an amazing support. And I'm so, so, so lucky to have benefited from that. And, you know, she's incredibly generous in terms of feedback. And
does she read your work?
She reads my work. She does.
Oh my
whenever.
God, that's so exciting.
Yes, it's incredibly, incredibly wonderful. And yes, it's another, I'm just still sort of in awe that this is where I've ended up, because it's, I mean, my dad also was and is a writer, and he published a collection of short stories the year I was born, and, you know, with an independent publisher. So he, growing up, was someone I turned to, and he read like all of my essays when I was in school, and I have always sent him any creative work that I'm working on. But yeah, and so then I met Charlie, and then I met Meg through Charlie, obviously, and she has just been absolutely amazing. And it's through her that I found out about this program, Bookends, this fellowship, because this is a program that she started. And she read a draft of my novel that I had, one of the many beginning, very, very, very early drafts.
Yeah.
And she thought that I would maybe really benefit from Bookends. So she recommended that I apply. And I'm so, so, so grateful, because really everything has happened as a result of me doing that program.
Well, and
I have
hard
also
work. And talent.
And my hard work.
Let us not discount that. It's very important.
Thank you.
Can we just take a moment to say like how cool it is that like she's essentially your mother-in-law, right? Like you guys have been dating for 10 years. I'm just going to upgrade her to your mother-in-law right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How cool that like you have this relationship with your mother-in-law, because I have a great relationship with mine. And I think that it's just something that if we have more of that in the world, better things happen because it's women supporting women. So
yeah, yeah, definitely. And it's also just been, you know, she has created like a true career, you know, out of writing. Yes, and of that course. Is, of course, it is absolutely amazing to witness that, you know, and yeah. learn from it. And so few people have that perspective. So I'm so lucky to be able to look to her and learn from her in so many ways. And also just, yeah, have her in my corner. I'm so, so, so lucky. And I think it's really important to be transparent about the ways in which we are lucky, you know, because yeah. luck is a huge...
We all have advantages. Listen, yes. this is...
Yeah. Yeah.
This is true of every single person in every situation, and that varies. And
yeah.
You know, definitely. I think The Interestings was definitely one of the novels that shaped me. So I think that like the idea of being able to get feedback from someone like Meg, like that's invaluable. Yeah. And it just makes the work stronger. And absolutely, you should
definitely
take advantage of that, because that is how the world works. And I love that we're talking about it. So, okay, so you must have gotten a lot of good writing advice. Like, what is the best writing advice you've ever gotten?
Okay, so one thing that Meg says often is, she says that you should write what obsesses you. This is a Meg quote. I must give her credit for this quote. And I think in terms of harmless, I took that kind of literally, because
there is a lot of obsession in this book. It is a book filled with obsession.
Yeah, there's a lot of obsession in the book. But also, like, nostalgia is a theme that obsesses me. Like, I'm completely – that's my entire life right now is sort of thinking about the past and thinking about loss and thinking about, like, growing up. That's just the phase of life I'm in. So I learned from that, and I've applied that to the kinds of things that I enjoy writing about and I allow myself to write about because of that wonderful, wonderful advice that I always hold close.
That is very good advice. I like that. I think that changes it. So if someone loves your novel, what other novel would you say they should read?
That's a great question. One of my like major, major, major influences, which is not even a novel, it's a short story. It's called The Yellow Wallpaper, and it's by Charlotte Perkins Gilman. And it's a short story I read in, I think it was middle school. It's really disturbing, though. And it's also about obsession, and it's also about loneliness. And it's a little bit about psychosis. I won't say more in terms of harmless, but yeah, but that's a short story that I think has probably the biggest impact on my writing out of any other thing that I've read. Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier.
Oh, yeah.
That's also like the books that are about women doing bad, like just having weird impulses and making bad decisions. Those are my favorite kinds of books because I can relate to them in so many ways, even love if that. Not to like such a dramatic degree. I love Patricia Highsmith. Honestly, also, like, not to just go with a lot of sort of older, not less contemporary literary fiction, but Jane Eyre is also really important to me and is a book that I oddly listened to on like an audiobook form.
Interesting.
Yeah, like many, many years ago. And I could not stop listening. I was totally obsessed. I was like, taking very long subway rides with my headphones on, like completely zoned out and missing my stop. Yeah, because again, it was just sort of creepiness, like women experiencing creepiness in the world of like sort of spooky creepy. And even if that's not my life in so many ways, it's still like sort of an internal thing. And there's
I totally get that.
Like, I don't know, fear is kind of intrinsic also to being a woman in certain devastating ways.
I also wonder how much of it is like we want to, because I have the same taste that you do. Like, how much of this is like us wanting to live vicariously through in a safe space because books are safe, right? Like you control when you stop reading, you can close it. But us wanting to live vicariously through these women who are not living the script that society handed to them. You know?
Yeah. Yes.
I think that's really interesting too.
Absolutely.
Okay, another question our listeners asked, which I really liked. What is your biggest fear as an author?
Wow.
Biggest fear.
That's a really good question and is something I'm thinking about all the time.
Is it like losing a whole manuscript because like your computer got,
okay,
got like erased or something? Like I feel like it's mm-hmm. probably going to be something like all writerly fears are something like that, like very anxious.
I mean, I am so anxious. I am constant. I'm like in a state all the time. And often it's not something that I externalize, I think, but in my head, I am losing my shit, dare I say, on the shit no one tells you about writing. Yeah, so definitely I'm constantly emailing drafts to myself, a million percent.
Okay, so that's not going to happen. So that fear will not happen.
That is not, yeah. I think like right now, I'm just like thinking about everyone in my life reading this book and thinking about all of the people having an opinion about it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
just yeah. really, it's incredibly, incredibly vulnerable to put a book out into the world. Yeah. And it's not, that part of it is only just dawning on me right now, I think, because
I think
it's
good,
just
though.
About
if
to happen.
If you thought about it before, you might have stopped yeah. yourself from including so much into the book. Like,
I think that's really true. Yeah. I think that's really yeah. true. I feel lucky that it's only just sort yeah. of setting in the fear of actually just like, you know, judgment. That's really my biggest fear right now as a debut author, like who is about to have a book in the world for the very first time. But I also feel prepared to receive criticism, you know, and feel like this book is not going to resonate with everybody. That is totally yeah. okay with me.
Nothing that is interesting is universally liked. That's not how it works.
That's, you know, and nothing. I agree. I really, yeah. really agree with yeah. that. Yeah. And it's taken me maybe like a little while to get to this yeah. place where I am in agreement, like in terms of my own work at least. But yeah, but I really feel proud of writing something that not yeah. everyone is going to love. That actually,
I love that.
Is something that I'm really excited. And yeah. I'm excited to hear what people think, good or bad. So, you know.
Yeah. I like that. I love that for you. Okay.
So for our final question, I always ask anyone I interview, like, please plug in a book. It can be a book that you're excited to read, but you haven't read yet. It can be a book that you just finished and you're loving, a book that you're reading right now, anything. It has to be a book that there's excitement around this book in some way.
Okay. Okay. Well, there are so many books that I'm really, really excited about reading. One that comes to mind is a book, this, I have not read it. It's not out yet. I think it'll be out this week, actually, maybe tomorrow.
Wait, what's
it's called
book?
A Good Person by Kristen King.
A Good
King.
Person?
Okay. Yes. I think it's going to be so up my alley is really all I have to say. Like, I think I think it'll be up both our alleys, Cece.
Ooh.
Because it's also it sort of weird, creepy vibe, women
amazing.
Doing bad things. Yes, and Kristen's amazing. That. So that's a book I'm really excited about and have not read yet and is coming out tomorrow, so I cannot wait to have it. But yeah, and it's also going to be made, it's going to be a movie already.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm really excited about that one. And I'm constantly reading. I just finished rereading In the Cut by Susanna Moore recently, which is like an erotic thriller that is, it's a wild book, I will say, but I really enjoyed rereading it. And she's also sort of an influence, I would say. So anyway, that's one book that I just finished rereading, and then another book that I'm really excited to read.
Our super fans will know that whenever I ask authors to plug in a book, they do at least two. People cannot only okay. do one. It's a thing. It's a problem. Jennifer Close, I will never forget it. Jennifer Close was like, oh yeah, I'll plug in a book. I think she said like seven. So thank you for continuing the statistic yeah. of authors not being able to name only one book. We appreciate that.
I could go on, but I won't. Yeah.
I know. You're like controlling yourself. Anyway, yeah. Randa, thank yeah. you. I'm going to hold up your arc once more.
Okay.
I'll just sell the post-its, guys. I'm trying to hide the post-its. I have so many post-its. I've annotated this book so much. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for writing this amazing novel. I cannot wait to celebrate with you at your book launch. I'm really excited, and congratulations.
Thank you so much, Cece. This has been an absolute joy, and I love this podcast, as I said before. So I'm just thrilled. Thank you for everything.
Thank you for being here.
And that's it for today's episode. I hope you'll join us for next week's show. In the meantime, keep at it. Remember, it just takes one yes. The last beta reader matchup of the summer has been extended thanks to gremlins in the system. Instead of the matchup happening on the 2nd of June, it will now be extended to the 9th of June with matchup emails going out that day. If you haven't registered yet and would like to take advantage of this extension, you have until midnight Eastern Time on the 8th of June. Please go to theshitaboutwriting.com, look for the beta reader matchup tab, and you can find all the details and register there.
What's up, everyone? This is Cece. So I recently grabbed lunch with an acquiring editor from HarperCollins who told me that the number of submissions she's been getting has nearly doubled. And I wasn't surprised at all because every agent and editor I know has been talking about how the volume of submission keeps increasing. So personally, that is a wonderful thing because it's more reading for me, but it also means I have more chances of matching with authors. I consider it a privilege to review queries on Books with Hooks and, of course, in my submissions inbox. But at the same time, I talk to writers who tell me that they wish agents would read more than a few pages because, and I quote, "my story gets better in chapter two." I have to be honest, this kills me. It's like me wanting chocolate chip cookies to have the nutritional value of kale. It's just not realistic. Like it or not, no agent, no acquiring editor is going to stick around to see if a submission gets better. It's not because we're mean, it's because we get dozens and dozens every day. I know it's harsh, but ambitious writers embrace harsh realities. So here it goes. It's your job to make your opening pages irresistible, to make agents crave it, to make agents want to read more. That's why I'm so excited about my upcoming course, Starting It Right, How to Begin Your Story in the Best Place and in the Best Way. I created this course after studying hundreds of books. I've mapped out elements that are present in the beginning of all successful novels and memoirs. And I've designed checklists, actual checklists, that you can use to ensure that your story's beginning is seducing your reader. We'll cover how to write a great first line, different types of beginnings, and how you can choose the best one, the best place to start, and the best way to start. Yes, these are totally different things. When it makes sense to add a prologue and when it doesn't, how to frame your inciting incident in an appealing way, how to balance exposition and mystery, how to include context but not weigh it down with too much backstory, and what to do if your story has more than one POV or timeline. Most of all, I'm going to show you how to make readers want to turn to chapter two. Join me for this multi-day course designed to help you break through the noise. You'll leave with a clear, actionable breakdown of exactly what goes into a terrific beginning. If you've already signed up, come prepared to take lots of notes. We're talking hundreds of slides with real-world examples and specific techniques, plus a super fun surprise that I can't wait to share. I hope to see you there.